Gentlemen, to a very special edition of the Vinnie Eastwood Show. That's right, it's very special because it's exactly like every other show. Completely different. And I'm the only thing that seems to be the mainstay here. That's why it's called the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Because I sum things up in a very strange way sometimes. I make terrible puns. And I even make fun of incredibly horrible things. And the reason of the show is not to wake anybody up. Somebody wants to wake up, that's their decision. They're the one that has to do all the research in order to qualify as being waked up. Nobody else can wake you up. You're the one who winds up searching, reading, watching, listening to all these various sources of information around you so that you can come up with some kind of idea about how the world really works. And the problem was researching into things and learning about the truth of them. You realize that virtually nothing at all ever has been the way it actually is. That's the way the world works. All the important information that you need to know is kept from you for as long as possible. I seek to break that chain, ladies and gentlemen, and I can't do it alone. That's why you, the listeners, share all these radio shows. And that's why we have so many varied, sometimes very interesting, sometimes very cool, sometimes very huge guests on this show. And we get them to tell their story, who they are, what they do. Because everybody's got a story. And if you listen to enough stories of different people from all over the world, not having the same guest on time after time after time after time, same tone, I mean, it's good to listen to. But how do you grow from that, really? My very special guest today is Freighter X, fellow American Freedom Radio Show host. Freighter, welcome to the program.
Oh, thank you, Vinny. How you doing?
I'm really good now that you're here.
All right. I'm glad to be here as well. I'm doing great now.
Well, as we normally start off the show, Freighter, just for those who don't know, explain who you are and what it is you do.
Well, Vinny, first of all, you are one of the great constants in this multiverse, so I am glad to participate and be your co-conspirator today on this this show that you do, because I'm a big fan. And a big shout-out to the chat line, too. My lovely wife, Materx, is in the chat with all your people, just sitting around talking while we get this show on the road.
So you're Materx. And your wife is Materx because she's your mother. It's very clever.
Thank you. Yes, that is true.
Yes. In a lion herd mating, humping on the leg kind of sense of the word.
Jeez. All right, here we go. Okay,
maybe not lion. Perhaps she's a tiger.
Ah, yes. A tigress, if you will. Yes. Mm-hmm. Anyone who wants to chat with her, she's in the chat room right now over at Guerrilla Media, so they can feel free to jump in there and just see what she has to say to them and what kind of comments we can get going here as a result of what we throw back and forth, eh, Vinny?
Oh, yeah, and if she gets angry, you know, I'm going to have to just be forced to say, easy, Tiger.
Right. I'm sure she's amused by all this. All right, well, as you said, you know, I, too, I'm just another guy on this crazy bus called AFR, you know, careening through the galaxy, trying to point out the truths as we stumble upon them and grope for them in the darkness of media, mind control, and twisted notions of civic mythology. My show is called Radio Free Humanity for now. Actually, we're coming up on the last transmission of the format as Radio Free Humanity. We're about to launch the new format, which will be simply the Middle Chamber with Freighter X. Same time, same channel. That's Saturday nights, 10 p.m. Central on American Freedom Radio, AmericanFreedomRadio.com.
You should get some Chinese affiliates, mate, because that way you can be the Middle Chamber in the Middle Kingdom.
Yeah, right. Well, you know, speaking of affiliates, I am happy to report to you that I am, in fact, being sponsored right now by half a dozen publishing houses that are sending me media, material, books, and other things to review and have access to their authors and creators in order to bring the same kind of quality guests and interesting topics like you were speaking about in your opening, you know, mixing it up, bringing some really cool stuff and cool people. Like this weekend, we have Dr. Joseph P. Farrell coming in to discuss two of his newer books, Roswell and the Reich, and the other one's called LBJ and the Conspiracy to Kill Kennedy. And so that's going to be, you know, an awesome conversation.
Is the theme song for the show by chance Stuck in the Middle with You?
Oh, that would be a great one. I would love that. Yeah, no. Well, actually, I have my own intergalactic house band, Vinny. I'm like Conan O'Brien, you know? I've got the band right there creating my own custom-made theme song, which you ought to check out. You know, anybody listening wants to check that out. Systemic's the name of the band. They, too, have links on my website, which is middlechamberfx.com, and my chat room's there, and a lot of other media content as well.
I can relate to that, man. It's really good to just be with your band having a jam.
Oh, it's excellent. And we're going to have a future show where we have the band in the studio performing some original tracks.
Oh, mate, that's awesome. I was interesting you should say this and mention this, because last night, guess what I was doing? Two of my truther buddies, one of which is a, you know, sound trained technician, we just got together in his room at his house where he's got all the sound equipment and stuff, and we just had like a jam for like an hour or two. Came with some really, really awesome stuff.
That's what we're calling a type one jam, you know, for this type one civilization. You're a type one artist, I guess.
Well, the thing is, we filmed it, and so now we know what chords we were playing, what pitch we were singing in, what the words were. All made up off the top of the heads, and we were just flowing together because we're all truthers. We know, you know, that the stuff is really worth it, and everything else kind of goes away after that. There's none of that ego about, oh, I was supposed to lead there. I want it to be an E sharp, not an E minor, you know.
No, absolutely. You know, Vinny, you're really hitting upon something here, though. Let's stop for a moment and talk about this. What you're talking about is creatively expressing everything you guys are taking on board. And we all need to do that. We all need to creatively expel the data and the information and the impressions and the, you know, implications back out of us. Because it's like, you know, toxic. I mean, if it stays inside of you, it could eat away at you. But expressing it and putting it out there for others to hear it and see it and understand, I mean, that's what it's all about. We're doing the same thing on this end of the water, you know, on this side of the street.
And I think that's why the New World Order tries to make everybody feel alone, is because they know that we're really not. And they know that if we realize we're not alone, we're very powerful together.
Oh, once again, you're hitting it right out of the park, Vinny. That's it right there. If we remain divided and afraid and disempowered, we are easier to manipulate. We are easier to control. If we're allowed to band together and start hitting drums and singing songs and building a fire and grooving together, I mean, that's going to screw the economy up, right? I mean, we got to do something about this. How are we going to tax that?
Hey, revolutions have been built off the backs of songs.
Oh, it's always the case. Song, music carries in ideals and higher knowledge. It carries them. I mean, that's how, you know, part of the whole oral tradition of ancient times was singing the lyrics, you know? I mean, that's how traditions are kept, is through song. And,
well, because that's the essence of a catchy song, isn't it? Because songs help you to remember things. What the current massive, disgusting music industry is doing right now is appalling. Get this. I just learned this last night. They open a bank account for you, and they say, we're going to go to $50,000 a year. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And if you make it big, you make it big. But if you don't, that $50,000 isn't actually just money they're giving you. They're opening a bank account and putting you in debt, right? A lot of music producers came from the finance world.
So they're basically just, you know, roping new victims into their usury system, a wealth extraction system.
They suck the lifeblood out of your work. They don't appreciate you, tell you what to do. If you start talking back, hey, you ain't going to have a record contract, buddy. It's a standover.
It's a sad state of affairs, and it's worldwide. You know, what you're talking about, they've commodified every level of our society. I mean, we right here in my home area here, the housing situation over here is pathetic. And the banks and the insurance companies are jacking up the prices on mortgaging and rentals. It's making it impossible for working class folks to live and to do anything but continually go further and further into debt.
It occurred to me, and occurred to all of us, that if we wanted to get together, record our instruments and our voice, rehearse a little bit or whatever, we can make an album. I can design our album covers. I've done it before. You know, we don't need them anymore.
Well,
I think they're deathly afraid of it.
Yeah, that's the big secret. I mean, I was just talking to Freeman about that today. You know, we're trying to put all kinds of things into the works to lead to just that kind of, a place where all of our creative media could be available, for everyone and inspire others as well, because it's, the snowball effect. You know, and that's really the danger, though, I think, from the position of those who would maintain the status quo. You know, I mean, that's the bottom line, is they want to keep everything just the way it is because, you know, the pie is split up with them in favor.
The problem is that when society collapses, a lot of customary morals and ethics come out of the question. Like, let's say, for example, within a month or so, we get hit by an asteroid and the government announces it today. How many people do you think will go and try and shoot the president?
That's a good question. I don't know. You mean because they would feel like all hope is gone? You know, what's the point?
It's just like there's no consequence you can bestow on me. And it's something I've always wanted to do. I've always been so angry. And now, and the reason why you don't do it is because you're a good, decent person, aren't you? And you abide by the law and you don't rob other people of their life, property, or their liberty.
In our modern world, in our postmodern world, it's becoming more and more difficult to exercise your rights. I mean, have you seen the most recent, I was wondering what you thought we were going to do against the most recent anti-free speech technology coming out of Japan. Have you seen this new device they have to be able to stop people from talking?
Oh, yeah, I remember seeing about that. And I guarantee you, Freda, my girlfriend is going to want one.
Yeah, my wife's already put in an order, actually. She's
You see, this is the, that's the first thing that comes to mind, you know? The lady always tells you to shut up, you know? You just
right, and what about a guest who's being unruly right now? But all kidding aside, though, and then you can see the applications on a grander scale and the implications. I mean, they're legion here. This is like next level 1984 type stuff here.
Don't you think it'd be much easier to rape a woman if you also had a gun that could make sure that she couldn't scream?
Wow. I mean, that's the kind of,
think real dark about anything that gets released. I'm telling you, as bad as you could imagine it could ever possibly be, it's usually just as bad or much worse. In fact, it's usually just much worse.
On the other side of the coin, there's the gentleman on the bus who activated a cell phone jamming device and made it so nobody could talk on their phones on the bus because he was sick of the loud conversations all around him. He's looking at $16,000 fine for his little mayhem, though.
Well, to silence someone without a government license, right?
Exactly.
So who's going to... Now, the ultimate question, who's going to have their finger on the trigger of that gun at the end of the day? The government.
Absolutely.
People working for the government. Blind, unthinking people. Oh, this guy's talking about how he's free and he's got rights. Now, I'm glad.
Activate the silence cannon. The silence bazooka.
These people are spitting information. These people are spitting information at us. Silence them. Silence, I say.
Exactly. It's a crazy, crazy world. Ooh, I tell you, you know, I peer over as the sun sets here in America. I tell you, a nation, an empire, seemingly in decline. Vinny, I wonder about oh so many things. It's scary times. These banksters seem to be winning over here. I'll tell you, and there are elaborate systems of wealth extraction, perfecting them more and more each day.
I feel that the United States is infected with a virulent strain of scumbaggery.
That's a good diagnosis, doctor.
Well, thank you. I concur.
Shall we go on to the smoking lounge now?
Now, the ultimate question when we talk about government and liberties is where to draw the line with your liberties and your rights. My personal take on it is if you have rights that are granted to you by God, there's the line. You have those rights. Never freaking give them up. Otherwise, people are just going to wind up taking all of them at the end of the day. You know, the government is like a mouse. If you give him a cookie, he's going to want a glass of milk.
That's a good point. Absolutely. A gilded cage, right?
Yeah. I mean, we're talking about going from the gilded age to the gilded cage in less than one generation. And I feel that my generation's problem is that we read between the lines so much that we miss the lines themselves, and we don't react when those lines are crossed anymore.
And that's the thing. It's, you know, people are so easily diverted, so they cannot react. They're busily being distracted by media. Multimedia, the wrong kind.
Which is all just a convenient coincidence, I'm sure. You're listening to the Vinny Eastwood Show. My very special guest is Freighter X, and we'll be right back after the break at the Vinny Eastwood Show.com. Join us in the chat room.
Yeah. Yeah. And no one like me. Yeah. 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 Congratulations. You made it. Welcome to the Crusader. It's been a long time coming, yo.
Yeah.
But I'm here now. So what you wanna do?
Huh?
How many dudes you really know can flow like this, like this, like this? Let's do it. How many dudes you know vote like this? How many dudes you know flow like this?
Not many, if any, not many, if any.
How many dudes you know got the skills to go and rock a show like this? I don't know anybody.
Check, check to the mic, check. 1, 2 from a crew coming through.
Welcome.
We got hype yet. Nowadays everybody wanna talk, but we got some.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the show that's all about throwing down. Just going with it. Y'all hit a man move like an RS. The show that's all about having a sense of humor, because in a world so full of chaos and madness, if you lose that, you will go friggin' nuts. Some people take things far too seriously. You can talk about very serious topics and not take them too seriously, because that is the thing that will wind up destroying you most often, is yourself and obsessing over things and not being able to balance yourself out. The key to balance is being able to go from one extreme to the other and still be able to return to the center unscathed. That's balance. As far as I'm concerned, everybody has ups and downs. As long as you don't get permanently stuck, take things easy. There's no reason to hurry your death, because it gives you unnecessary stress, which allegedly causes up to 90% of all illness. So, if you want to be healthy, stop stressing about things. Have a few laughs. Meet up with some good people who you can have some decent conversation with. Some people that are older than you, who know things that you don't. Don't waste your time. There are 7 billion people on this planet. You don't have to spend 1 minute with people who do not inspire you, care about you, or click with you. That is what individualism has brought us in this world. Wondrous variety so that nobody ever goes hungry if they're looking for some nice conversation to sink their teeth into. Like with my very special guest, Freighter X. Welcome back.
It's good to be here. You know, I agree with you. I agree with you, Vinny, that we got to, looking at what we look at every day, you know, people like us and the people listening to this show, it would be impossible to process all this information without cultivating some kind of an inner faith, a rich sense of higher ideals like wisdom, tolerance, patience. I mean, there's no way to process all this negativity without some sort of balance like you're speaking about. And I think it's important for each one of us to find that balance in ourselves, you know, whatever path that may be. I don't preach any one set path. I think there's many, many paths up the mountaintop, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And if there isn't a path for you, then make your own.
Absolutely. The last words of the Buddha, very, very poignant. Doubt and find your own light.
Hmm. It seems this is one of the interesting problems of our society. And as you mentioned, the word light, you know, like just kind of like, you know, there's certain people who just glow because they're so friendly, they're so energetic, they're really happy, and they infect you, essentially, with that goodness. And you pass it on to other people like it's a disease. Those kind of people are growing fewer in number day by day as we have all this violence, all this BS news, all this countries being invaded, all this corporate dictatorship. It seems like they're really trying to eradicate what is good about people by making a culture that sees those people as a threat.
Well, they are. I mean, the culture around us sees anyone who would embrace light and who would recognize that all good things in life really are free, that the things that we really need and want aren't really there to be pursued with money. I mean, it's the biggest secret going on. And people out there who embrace the notion of living life deliberately are dangerous to the status quo. Wouldn't you agree?
Absolutely. And you make your show deliberately different from other shows for a specific reason too. And I'd like you to enlighten us all as to exactly what makes you different than other radio shows.
Well, you know, like I said before, I'm like everybody. I'm just like anybody else out there seeking the truth. I may be a little bit more well-read than some, a little bit less than others. But besides the fact that I just feel like I launch myself from a sense of general optimism towards the inner goodness of humanity, I really still believe that even in the light of all this darkness, even in the horrible things we hear every day, I still believe in the genuine goodness of humanity as a species. I think that we've just been terribly misled. And so aside from this optimism, I think that what makes me stand out as unique, I mean, first of all, I am, in fact, a master initiate in 9 esoteric orders. I've been knighted over 5 times. And so I have a special position as someone of an insider with actual access to years of experience in Western lodge traditions and rituals, and also access to many libraries and other forms of, like, for example, every order has their own archives with papers and research and materials that are not available to the general public. And so
like the Jedi archives.
Exactly, like the Jedi archives. Exactly. good analogy. And so with all that, I can speak from a sense and a position of authority when I tell people things with regards to what people suspect and fear about esoteric orders. And on my show, we take an educated look at the misconceptions and the misinformation out there with regards to secrecy. I ask you, Vinny, isn't it remarkable that, you know, an order like Freemasonry, for example, which seems to be at the core of all the great revolutions in our histories in Europe, the Renaissance, the Enlightenment, that these members of these orders were right there in the middle of all of that, basically engaging and encouraging others to engage in activities which basically threw down the shackles of ecclesiastical authority as well as aristocratic authority in Europe and across the world. Now, isn't it remarkable that this order that was engaged in all this liberty is now feared by the general public because it's a secret society and it has these, you know, myths that surround it of all these dark accusations given it by guys like Leo Taxil, who was an undercover Jesuit agent who wrote one of the first so-called exposés accusing the Masons of being satanic. You know, I mean, he was a Jesuit agent who came out years later and admitted publicly, after all the damage was done, that he lied and made up all the accusations against Freemasonry. Well, the reason why I believe that they would involve themselves in a multi-generational slander campaign against orders like Freemasonry is because at the core, these orders contain teachings which help people to self-determine, to self-actualize, to realize their full potential. And that is at complete odds with a system of thought control, mind control, and general fascism that we have on the bill today. And so it's, you know, it's okay to accuse Masonry of being secret, but we are not encouraged to look at the secret dealings behind closed doors in governments and all the really impertinent secrets that are committed that end up really impacting every one of our lives. We don't look at those secrets and don't accuse them of anything satanic, you know, not in general in mainstream media, for example. But yet we're all supposed to nurture and maintain this constant fear of secret societies. So anyways, that was a little bit of a digression, I know. But inevitably, go ahead.
But incidentally, when you have a look at some of the secrets that are being kept by governments and some of the people that are involved in these operations, a lot of them happen to be Freemasons.
Absolutely, because the systems that are there, they utilize the same tools. It's like reaching into the same toolbox, and there are hundreds, if not thousands, of orders that are appendant bodies to orders like Freemasonry that use the same tools. And you won't even know they exist until they invite you to join, if they invite you to join.
Yeah, I got invited by... gave a kind of a presentation. Now, allegedly... And I'm not sure if this is true, but I was told that once you get to the 33rd degree, that's when you get the final secret, that you have to renounce Jesus and you have to swear allegiance to Lucifer. Is that true?
Well, I mean, the thing is that you've made a lot of statements in that one statement. First of all, you said when you get to the 33rd degree. Now, that's not something that just happens for anyone. It's an if you get to the 33rd degree. And that's also something that people need to be clear about. There are not 33 degrees in Freemasonry. There are 33 degrees in the Scottish Rite, which is a separate order from Freemasonry. And this is a huge misconception. And this is part of material that I'm gathering for a book that I hope to be releasing next year called The Secret War Inside Freemasonry.
And now, hold on a second. Are you saying that there's many different types of lodges and various different branches of Freemasonry, kind of like there's very different types of churches with different types of pastors and whatnot? You know, it's sort of the same thing, but it's all very different and unique. And what the Scottish Rite has done is they've basically cornered the market and started to use, instead of just the normal Freemasonry, which is to, you know, help you to self-actualize and be better at who you are, introduce you to good people and what have you. And instead, it's actually really decided to just dominate Freemasonry and take all the rest of them out.
Absolutely. I think that the Scottish Rite infiltrated Freemasonry and co-opted it, not unlike what happened, I believe, in the time of the first century with the Roman Catholic Church co-opting the Way from an aesthetic movement that existed in that area of Palestine in the first century way.
So the secret accusations and stuff like that about Freemasonry are true, except not about Freemasonry, but about the Scottish Rite.
That is what I would contend.
And people need to make that distinction.
That's correct, and that's what I would contend, and I would tell you right now, when you watch any History Channel show, anything on Freemasonry in the media today, you're hearing it coming from the voices of invariably a 33rd degree Scottish Rite Freemason who's sitting there supposedly representing Freemasonry as a whole. Freemasonry is something called ancient craft masonry, and it is merely 3 degrees. Everything else is other orders. There's the York Rite, there's the Knights Templar, which are within the York Rite, there's the Royal Arch, which is within the York Rite, then there's the Scottish Rite, which has 33 different degrees within its order. And they have made inroads for the last 200 years. They have taken over Freemasonry. I mean, that's what it started in about, I would say, well, I mean, they started coming into America in about 1740, but it wasn't until about 1805 that the Supreme Council announced its existence and began to exert control over America. And that's when you have the famous election cycle of 1800, where people were declaring at the debates where Thomas Jefferson was taking a lot of heat because he was being accused of being a member of the Bavarian Illuminati. Because of his associations with different lodge and degree systems in Europe, especially in France. Excuse me. So
there were conspiracy theorists that were saying about Thomas Jefferson, too. The cycle
during his
continues.
Election. Yes, during his election, he had to stand there and take, you know, flack for that. And there's a letter, famous letters that you can look up to anyone who wants to Google search Library of Congress, George Washington's letters about the Bavarian Illuminati. Several in a couple different letters, he mentions the Bavarian Illuminati. At first, he's dismissive. And then later on, he's like, yeah, there seems to be something to this, what he calls Germanic Illuminati that has invaded our government. And there, you know, there's these little accusations, little hints about it. And then, you know, a little later on, you have the appearance of Albert Pike. I mean, there's a figure that deserves a little bit of scrutiny. This guy comes onto the scene in the 1850s. He's the only brigadier general of the Civil War that fought for the South, Vinny, who was convicted of treason. And he's got a statue in Washington. That's strange in and of itself. His body is interned in the House of the Temple in Washington. The Supreme Council, 33rd degree, with the Ziggurat Temple on top. His body's in that building.
Now, isn't it interesting that the higher up on the branch of scumbaggery you go, the better you were remembered, and the more people appreciate you and see you as a great figure in history?
Well, I mean, isn't that always the case? I believe that Albert Pike represents this kind of agent provocateur who was brought in. The man spoke several ancient languages in like the 1850s in a time when, you know, I mean, it was so much limitation to information. And this guy was on top of it. He taught himself Roman law. He went through 2 years of Harvard in 1 year. They tried to charge him for 2 years, so he left and dropped out, went out to the frontier and taught himself law. And became a lawyer where he defended mostly Indian tribes, Native American tribes. He also commanded a battalion of Native Americans in the Civil War. And when he gets out, I mean, some say he was a member of the Knights of the Golden Circle, that he was a member of the KKK, that he actually wrote the ritual for the KKK. That's what supposedly, I mean, these are all the legends that surround him. And inevitably, he turns up as the Sovereign Grand Inspector General of the Scottish Rite in about 1855, and takes it from there. The rest is history. We can go back into it a little bit when we come back if you want.
Yeah, well, it's surprising if you get a guy who's really good at reciting things and remembering things and manipulating people in order to do his will. He usually does pretty well in elections, especially if he has a teleprompter surgically implanted to his cheekbones! You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. And we'll be right back. foot show you are.
Poor people. Yeah, I really feel sorry for anybody who listens to the Vinnie Eastwood show. Namely, because the only reason why you would be listening to the show is because you recognize that there's a huge scumbaggery elite that are trying to fracking kill you. So, you know, you deserve a bit of pity. So do I. We're all just going to get together and it's going to be a big pity fest. How about that? Fabulous, right? Or we get together and just be happy. You know? After all, it's just the end of the world. My very special guest is Freda Eggs from Radio Free. Well, the artist formerly known as the host of Radio Free Humanity, which will be rebranding soon. Welcome back.
It's good to be here. It's good to be here. I would like to just kind of – there's so many different ways we could come at what we've brought up here in the last segment with regards to Albert Pike, but I just want to come at it like this, okay? He's a guy who comes on the scene in the 1850s. He basically inherits what he calls a rubbish heap, in his words, a handful of scrap paper, which were almost like discontinued rituals jotted down and forgotten about in the desk of a famous lexicographer named Albert Mackey, who wrote the famous Encyclopedia of Freemasonry. And so basically Pike takes this and he runs with it. He takes all of his esoteric knowledge, which I believe he grafted much of his work from one Eliaphas Levi, an Albert Constant, who wrote a book called Transcendental Magic, or Magic, Its Doctrine and Ritual, which was translated by one A.E. Waite, which I think that people are familiar with Arthur Waite, who wrote the Rider-Waite deck. Now, go ahead, Vinny, you got a question?
I was just like transcendental magic. I mean, I was trying to think about how to translate that terminology, and it means losing touch with reality.
Yeah, well, basically what we have here is what I believe is a playbook in demonology. I mean, in many ways, I think that Albert Pike grafted the most potent aspects of this work, which was written about 20 years before his famous book called Morals and Dogma. And within Morals and Dogma, he placed, I believe, little cul-de-sacs or rabbit holes of mysticism, dark, occulted mysticism, which I believe if anybody actually engaged and tried to practice these would lead them down a dark, dead end that would keep them captivated and distracted from, like you said, from reality, you know, forever. Basically,
it's like they tell somebody to conduct rituals and they willingly participate in it in order to turn themselves into a vessel or to be possessed, essentially.
Now let's make a distinction, though. I am not at all saying that ritualized behavior in and of itself is bad. I think that we perform little rituals every day in our everyday lives. You know what I mean? Humans are by nature ritual creatures. We will do things ritually, you know, in our everyday lives. And it's just the way we...
perfect example, a person says, hey, how are you? And you go, I'm good. When really, I'm actually feeling freaking terrible, bro.
Yeah, or when you say knock on wood, you know, somebody knocks on wood. It's like little things we do that are just part of our makeup. It's a way we derive greater meaning out of reality. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. It's the rituals, I believe, that would mislead a person or otherwise enslave them. And there are rituals in media. I mean, we were just talking earlier, about music, and there's all kinds of methods of engaging a person into a ritualized activity. You know, because ritual it utilizes different things like light, sound, color, symbol. I mean, there's all sigils. There's all kinds of things involved. And so, and entertainment by its very nature, by its very definition, is to captivate the mind. So to captivate the mind, what better way than, a ritualized multimedia mind control?
Yeah, and with music as well. It's like anybody who's sitting there and they're singing along to the words and they're swaying as one, they're participating in a ritual.
And as we all know, subliminal messaging and symbolic communication, allegorically communicating to an individual, if you put images up and they are registered in your perceptual experience, they are filed in your memory, whether you even recognized them or not. And they will be filed in memory, and those memories will be, they will seem real when you recall them, because they will have an aspect of reality as they're filed in a physical neuropathway in your brain, which gives them reality.
Kind of like how the tobacco companies were financing children's toy cigarettes with particular looks and colorings to them, so that when the child as an adult would go in and perhaps buy their first pack of cigarettes, that something in their brain from their childhood, those good memories of play smoking and that kind of thing, would instantly make them go for their brand.
So
these people spend a lot of money paying very intelligent people to do stuff that's nuts.
And it's all part of ritualized behavior that captivates the mind and enslaves the consciousness.
It's straight conditioning, you know? And just in case you start to think about it, they'll do a little bit of brainwashing shampoo on it too after the conditioning.
So once I came into this, you know, and gained access to these orders, becoming a member, being initiated into these orders, I began my quest to uncover what I could about Albert Pike, to find out, you know, what was beneath all this, the motivating factors. And, you know, in my search in these, you know, Indiana Jones-like fashion, I'm going through these huge library stacks and old tomes that look like something out of Harry Potter. I mean, books that you break them open and the dust flies up. I mean, it's like these books have been rotten on the shelves for decades. Nobody's even touching them, right? It's like, you know, pearls just, you know, in the muck that nobody's even noticing. And I opened these books, and these ancient books that were written, you know, a couple hundred years ago, and I found that Albert Pike was involved in translating the Rig Veda and in translating the Zendavestra, the ancient Zoroastrian text from Persia. This guy was involved in some heavy-duty stuff. And so now I start to see a pattern, because I recognize that in the 1850s, they found the ruins of Nineveh and the ancient library of the Neo-Assyrian conqueror named Arshabinapal, which led, in fact, to Zachariah Sitchin's work with the Anunnaki and the whole thing about the Nephilim and the Watchers. And all of a sudden, a pattern's forming. And I'm starting to think to myself, wow, what was this guy engaged in? What was he putting together in this little playbook called The Morals and Dogma? I mean, if you look at certain rituals in groups like the Golden Dawn, for example, they took an ancient Greco-Egyptian ritual that was supposed to be an exorcism ritual, and they converted it into what they call the Bornless Ritual, where their members, and this is a ritual that Aleister Crowley adopted as his very own practice. And they use this ritual to welcome in watchers or guardian angels, basically to invite possession, Vinny. They're taking what used to be an exorcism ritual and converting it into a ritual that invites possession from your so-called guardian angels.
So, could I go so far as to say that people who are in the Scottish Rites of the 33rd degree are, to a degree, under the influence of possession by a dark entity of some kind?
Well, let's put it this way. People who are in the Scottish Rite, did you say people who are in the 33rd degree specifically?
Of the Scottish Rite.
Right. I think that people who are active members of the 33rd degree Supreme Council are engaging in demonology and interaction with Nephilim or the spirits of Nephilim.
There's no this way, that, or the other, that you think that that's really it?
Well, if they are not consciously, deliberately engaging in it, then they're involved with guilt by association and their collusion. You know, if they are completely ignorant to it, I can't imagine that they would be completely ignorant, because active members into the 33rd, there's only 33 of them in the entire world. That's a small group, you know, in the southern jurisdiction.
A group that has a lot of dirt on you, and you have a lot of dirt on them, so nobody says anything about anybody and keeps their lips tight.
Yeah, that's what it would be. And then, you know, when you go into something like that, I mean, you enter that doorway and they got the black hoods on, you know, all bets are off.
Yeah, and this is the thing. The rituals themselves, they do look really, weird and scary and like scenes from a horror film to a lot of people.
Well, yeah, I mean, some of the things are archaic, and I mean, you're definitely engaging in something that's supposed to be beyond your everyday experience. That's the whole idea of secrecy and ritualized, you know, esoteric work. It's supposed to be, when you think of it as a more positive aspect and the idea of education and of self-growth, it's supposed to be inviting higher ideals and higher truths through symbolism and allegory. That's the original intention. And what has
kind of
happened
to,
is... Go ahead.
To shock the body into accepting it
or for
advancing.
Well, we'll have to come back to it, I guess. But basically to condition the senses to perceive something beyond the normal everyday perception.
Well, yeah. I mean, when you are in a very, very terrified state and you're afraid for your life, you remember every detail and you remember everything that you see. Okay, it's kind of like that scene in Kingdom of Heaven, you know, he makes his son take the oath to defend the weak, and he says, that is your oath, and then he slaps him, and he says, that is to remind you of your oath, because when you're under trauma, or when you're in a scary situation, it makes a bigger imprint on you than other ordinary experiences where there's no emotion involved. Being involved in something emotionally, it's about the road you need to go in order to fully accept it. So at the end of the day, your emotions are what make you human. We'll be right back. Radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live from New Zealand, live from the future. Fabulously fluoridated capital of Auckland is very, very nice this time of year, because the seasons mean that we have an incredible cicada population that are the loudest fracking things you've ever heard in your life. And they go all day. Oh, yes, they do. And for some reason, it's quite soothing, kind of like being nagged at constantly. My very special guest is Freighter X, who is a constant nag on the secrecy of Freemasonry.
Yeah, I am. It's true.
You know, you're like the Freemasonry angry housewife.
I'm sure many Masons think that about me. they don't like to see me walking into a lodge. And, you know, honestly, I don't do much lodge visiting these days. I pretty much am in self-imposed exile from the lodges.
Well, you are lodger than life.
Yeah, right. I know. I saw a picture. Speaking of being larger than life, I saw a picture of you standing next to David Icke. What are you, like 6'5 or something, Vinny?
Very close, 6'4".
Really? Honestly?
6'5 with shoes.
Wow, because, yeah, I was thinking either David Icke is short or you are tall, my friend.
And I was there with shoes on, so you had the correct guess, yes.
Wow, no, seriously, I don't know if that's true or not, but it is remarkable right there on your website.
Yeah. Well, so. See, there's a reason I have on big guests. is to expose their audience to me, because by exposing them to me, I actually expose them to the ridiculously large, wide variety of guests that we have on this show, talking about fracking everything, you know?
Yeah.
You want to talk about anything.
There's amazing.
If you want to talk about anything, you know, this is the show to do it.
You have had some awesome guests. I got to say, I really love the show, and they're, you know, you're just hitting them out of the park. I can't wait to see what you do next.
And I can't wait to see what I do next. That's why, instead of waiting for it, I fracking do it. In fact, here's a comment for you, Freda. This is what has been, my producer and me are talking in the background. This is what we think about you. You're like, on a level of research and deep knowledge, deep research kind of thing, you're like on a level with Jordan Maxwell, as far as we're concerned. We've heard stuff from you we never heard anybody else talk about. It's like adding a whole new level to the game. And incidentally, we are having Jordan Maxwell on next week as well.
That's awesome. I can't wait to hear that. I mean, and I got to tell you, I'm flattered, and I appreciate the recognition that, you know, I am involved in discussing things that I don't hear a lot of other people talk about. So, you know, I'll take that. I think you're right on target with that one.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think it's like you have to live your life as if you're airplane peanuts. Complimentary.
Well, you know, the other thing is that I'm quite anachronistic. I have found in dealing with other people that I am, in fact, unique. You know, there's not, when most people aren't reading the amount of material that I go through. I mean, my wife is stunned by me. She sat back and watched me for the last 15 years just consume massive volumes of material. And she's my witness that it's actually happened. You know, aside from, obviously, when you talk to me, you realize that I do have, you know, I'm carrying around a bunch of useless knowledge, right? But inevitably...
Well, think about this. What does a man with hundreds of years of incredible knowledge under his belt live like?
Well, you know, I mean, that takes us right back to where we left off before the break, Vinny, because that's what I believe I found out about Albert Pike. Here was a man in the 19th century, in the middle of the 19th century, walking around with a massive cache of ancient and forbidden knowledge. And he was presented. Now, this guy was a Washingtonian socialite elite. He was spending his winters in Washington, D.C., and his summers out on the reservations with the wild Indians of Arkansas of the time. You know, he lived in summer camps with the Native Americans. And he was like a hunter and a tracker, and he was a bushman type, you know? And so... At one point, they thought he died. They got word back in Washington, D.C. that he died, and they held a huge processional funeral for the guy. And he showed up and was like, you know, classic Mark Twain, you know, these rumors of my death have been greatly exaggerated, you know, and joined the party and everything. I mean, he was a real life of the party type of guy. And he also, like you and me, was over 6 feet tall. And spoke many languages, and walking around with all this knowledge. And some say he was connected with guys like Carlo Mazzini, who was the head of the Italian Illuminati, who had inherited the tradition from the Bavarian Illuminati, started by Adam Westhoff. And so this is a connection. And Mazzini started the Young Americans groups in America that in the late 1800s recruited thousands, hundreds of thousands of young Americans into, basically quasi-mystical socialism order that I believe was part of the movement that led to the entire infiltration of the Scottish Rite into Freemasonry and basically the usurpation of that order. And this is what we are dealing with. And he was an agent provocateur, not unlike St. Paul, as I said before, who also, you could say, went into an area called Jerusalem and infiltrated an order and then started his own version of it.
I think he was an incredibly talented individual who was recruited.
Sure, absolutely. It happens all the time. You get tapped. You know, he was a guy, you know, either one you're talking about, whether it be Albert Pike or Paul, we know in both cases that they hit the ceiling. They were only allowed to go so far in their development. And so then somebody maybe tapped him on the shoulder and said, hey, how'd you like to go a little further? How'd you like to get a little higher? How'd you like to become a legend? How'd you like to be known as the progenitor of a movement? How'd you like to be the head guy, the top dog, the big kahuna, you know? And so inevitably, I think he took the bait. He took that, you know, carrot on the stick and ran with it. And, you know, there's a lot of evidence out there that is being brought together. And there's something to look forward to in the future. And if anybody wants to, by the way, Vinny, so we can move on. If anybody wants to check out my YouTube video series, it's a 3-part series, Freighter X on Freemasonry. You can find it at Mystic Media Project channel on YouTube, or you can just you can just search in YouTube, Freighter X on Freemasonry, and see the 3-part series, which talks all about this, which will eventually be a longer video and eventually a book.
Mm-hmm. And, oh man, I'm really sorry. I forgot. I had a really great question, but I forgot what it was. It's, some people are very, very obsessive about this particular subject, you know. And there's a lot of that going around on the truth movement for different subjects. Like, have you noticed that? There's people who are very general and cover a whole wide range sort of things and sort of don't believe everything, but are just more or less plodding along. And there are those who pick particular areas and choose to basically specialize. And
I absolutely
agree. I think that both are necessary because, after all, unless you had experts on all these different eclectic topics, how would anybody be able to generalize?
Well, yeah. I mean, there's so many different topics. Of course, you got to pick and choose your favorite pet topics. And, you know, that's a good point. And I have a lot to talk about the specific topic. But, in fact, I've tried not to talk about this topic as much, you know, on my show. So this could be something that you could say that I've been sort of avoiding a lot on my show because I wanted to cover a lot of other issues so I wouldn't be pigeonholed into the one subject. You know, because I am well-read across the board, and we could talk about a lot of stuff. And, you know, one of the other things that makes my show unique is having access to half a dozen publishing houses who provide me with books and other media and access to the authors so that I can bring all kinds of a wide range of topics, you know, like the authors I've already had and the ones that are coming up. I mean, there are so many. For example, John Michael Greer, he was on just recently. We talked about his book, which is Apocalypse Not. Everything You Know About 2012, Nostradamus and the Rapture is Wrong. Amazing topic, a great conversation. There's another guy coming on in next month. His name is James Olson, who's written a book called The Whole Brain Path to Peace. These are all books that are provided by these publishers. I have The Secret History of Rock and Roll by Christopher Knowles. He's coming up in the future. There's an author called Gerald Nicosia, who wrote Memory Babe, the biography of Jack Kerouac, and he's written a new book called One and Only, which is the untold story of On the Road, and he'll be on in the summer. These are all books that I've received from these publishers in order to basically bring these amazing, interesting subjects to the listeners and to, you know, because I'm interested in hearing about it as well and learning about this material as well.
Yeah, and that's something I like to do for my guests is just say, like some of them ask me, you know, what are we going to talk about? And my answer is pretty much always the same. Well, whatever you want to talk about, what are you interested in? What's your pet interest? You know, you get people to talk about what they're passionate about, and it makes for freaking good radio.
Oh, I couldn't agree more. I couldn't agree more. And, you know, I mean, another thing to say about one of the unique aspects of my show is when people donate to my show, any supporters that want to donate to my show, I send them free Organite. Custom-made Organite, and these are interactive Organite devices that are designed to protect people from deadly Organite radiation that is emitted from microwave devices like cell phones and computers and television, flat screen televisions and cell phone towers. And there's a whole movement out there for folks who want to check it out. Etheric Warriors.com is or .org is one of them, and WorldWithoutParasites.com. That's the work of Carol and Don Croft, who are engineers in the field of organite research and development. And you know, I mean, I'll build people pyramids. I'll send them the coolest looking pyramid for their conversation piece on their coffee table. That'll be protecting them as well as providing for interesting conversation. Anybody interested in Organite, look into it at organite.info. That's organite.info.
And have you? I presume you've got heaps of them, right? Have you felt a difference since you started doing the old orgos?
Absolutely. Personally, I was first introduced to Organite about 5 or 6 years ago, and it's changed my life. I mean, not only is it creative and artistic, you can really have fun with this stuff. And anybody who wants to check out Friends of Freeman social network at friendshipagenda.com, there's a whole page of Organite and people's different Organite from all over the world, people making it and putting it up there, you know, posting pictures and talking about how to make it and what it's, you know, what it's all about. So it's a real movement.
Does it relax you or does it give you energy?
It's not like that as far for me. It's comforting in a way. It's maybe it may even be a psychosomatic effect. It's comforting. And it's beautiful. It's engaging. It's, you know, you just, especially when you make it and then you polish it and you have a finished piece and there's an experience by you give it away. You gift it to people and it's like intriguing and people get excited when they, and children respond to it as well. They really like it. They're very excited about it, you know? And so it's just, it's something that I can't really say more than that. I mean, it's not like a perceptible effect, like a magical, you know, Hollywood type effect or anything like that. It's more of an imperceptible effect, I guess. But it's something that, you know, each individual responds to, you know, on their own. But I definitely recommend people looking into it and finding out more about it and see if you're drawn to it. I was drawn to it, and I've had the Crofts on my show a couple times. They're amazing people who have very interesting and exciting adventures to share.
Which comes back to the question about how we live our lives. So, you know, in your daily life and that kind of thing, you know, what are you doing? How are you paying the bills, Freda?
Well, you know, I mean, like I've told you before, I'm a gardener and a landscaper by trade. I basically work estate maintenance on real fancy homes on the water on the East Coast of America. And, you know, in the wintertime, we pretty much are unemployed. I collect for a few months while I wait for the spring in the growing season. And then basically I just do the basic maintenance to keep these properties beautiful for the wealthy and privileged when they come down for their month vacation. You know, it's a frustrating existence. I mean, it's a beautiful spot to live, but it's a big struggle because they really make you pay. These towns on the coast are basically elaborate shell games, wealth extraction systems designed to separate people from their gold, from their money. And so if you're working class, that means you too. You know, the wealthy are one thing, but the working class, you got to work extra hard just to maintain, just to tread water. And so I work, and when I'm not working in my free time, I have 4 children and a wife of 15 years. We, you know, we raise the kids. And then in the free time I have away from that, I have a little studio, a little office I go to filled with books and Organite and other strange and, you know, sundry items that are all around me, like my Knights Templar sword that's over 100 years old. And I sit here and I contemplate all the amazing topics that we discuss over the cyberspace radio waves.
In other words, you have no shortage of time to spend on things. Because you've decided that, hey, if this is my life, I'm going to enjoy it. And I'm really going to get into it. Because why do it half-assed? You're listening to the Vinny Eastwood Show. The show that's all about being half-assed. And we'll be right back after the break at thevinnyeastwoodshow.com.
The way it's going to be.
The word heart, there's something evolving. Whatever may come, the world keeps revolving. They say the next big thing is here, that the revolution's near. But to me it seems quite clear that it's all just a little bit of history repeating.
Welcome back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Shirley Bassey, ladies and gentlemen. And Propeller Heads called History Repeating. Very good song. You should illegally download it. Oh, I kill me. Anyway, my very special guest is Freighter X, and I'm looking at the clock here, Freighter. And I think about the last four segments we've just done. And I think, mate, we've really done something here that's I don't know, it's kind of like life-changing. Last night, man, and I think this kind of is on a par with that, this conversation we're having here with people listening. But we're just two people having a conversation, aren't we? And last night, I listened to an old Bill Cooper interview. Okay, it's like Bill Cooper breaks a Nazi out of a socialist trance. And it's 50 minutes of Bill Cooper talking to this guy who thinks the white race is everything we're going to... And Bill Cooper just explains the history, and through logic and reason, this guy suddenly has this profound realization that he'd been lied to the whole time. He'd gone to jail for these people. He'd hurt people because of these people. That kind of thing. It was his entire life. And Bill Cooper, just through information, and he came on to save a young radio host who wasn't, you know, just his first day or something like that. He wasn't prepared to handle this. And at the end, he said, you know, after he'd calmed down and they'd ran out of show time, he said, "Thank you very much for this conversation. I'm glad we had it. And can you please take this microphone off me because my hands are shaking and I'm emotionally drained. And I just hope I did some good here today." And he said, "I think you did." Now that was very profound for me to hear that. And it makes me wonder, you know, what kind of a person really is prepared to do that? Somebody who's really pure and willing to just put themselves right in the thick of it just to help other people.
Well, that's huge, man. I think that William Cooper was a pioneer. It's a tragic story, his end, you know, and I think that he pretty much cut the way for people like you and I to come after and try to, you know, return. If you know, we're returning, revisiting these topics that he first hit on, you know, that book, Behold a Pale Horse. I mean, that was a game changer. That was just like The Biggest Secret by David Icke. That book, those books were game changers for me. A couple of other books that really hit it for me was it's a book called The Myth Maker by an author named Hiram Maccabee. What a name, right? That's got to be like CIA cover name, Hiram Maccabee.
But it's like it's like code for high levels of macabre behavior.
Yeah, right. It's some sort of like flag to those in the know, you know. But
yeah, like for example, in Fight Club, you know, they don't say anything; they just nod.
Yeah, exactly. It's like a tap the nose kind of, you know, the Sting with Paul Newman moment, you know what I mean? But inevitably, that book, The Mythmaker, really is an iconoclastic book. And the one that was a huge just a mind-shattering book was one called Jesus Lived in India, written by Holger Kirsten, a German researcher researching the Shroud of Turin. And that led to another book I found in one of those old libraries, one of those old – it was the Grand Lodge Library of Kansas. And up in that library, I found an old black-covered book with no picture on it that was called Jesus Died in Kashmir. I mean, have you ever heard of that book?
No, I haven't.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing stuff, you know, challenging the mainstream gospel's account, you know.
I'll be perfectly honest. If somebody asks me, have I read this or anything, the answer will always, I'm not saying just some of the time, but always be no, because I just basically don't read books, you know. I watch documentaries. I talk to the authors of those books instead of reading their books.
I hear you. Like I said, I'm anachronistic. But I didn't say, did you read it? I said, had you heard it, just for the record.
That's true. But
anyway,
because I don't read, I'm not interested in books, so I'd probably never hear about them even if they did exist.
Well, that's totally understandable, though. And, you know, you're right in time with our world today, the postmodern world we live in. I mean, this is the way it is. And it's, I think it's, you know, it's not necessarily a bad thing if we engage in activity, like you said, if we go out and do things and get involved and not just sit back and observe and spectate, you know? That's the problem is. We're really, it's easy to be sedentary, isn't it?
We just had the Rugby World Cup here, right? And we had a forced amalgamation of 1.4 million people and 9 different councils into one all-powerful Lord Mayor with a self-elected cabinet and every single service contracted out to Veolia, Rothschild-owned largest water multinational and municipal subcontractors the world's ever seen.
Scary.
This is, it's a perfect example of what we're talking about here. You just get it all taken away from you. Hugely. And people don't recognize it. They say that it's good for you. This will make things more efficient. Look, this is what they're talking about. We want to increase productivity, right? You know what productivity means? It's a mixture of the two words, products and naivete. Anybody who tells you that they're doing something to increase productivity is trying to actually, in fact, increase slavery. Throwing you out on your ass and giving you nothing. Taking what you've got, but making you think that it's good for you. This is how a system works, to make sure that society goes in the direction it wants. By depriving everybody of all their power, using lies and manipulation to make sure that their attention is elsewhere, while they're denying with their mouths what they're doing with their hands. This is a very simple con that's been in practice for quite some time, and I'm sure almost everybody has met a con man or woman of this variety at some point in their life, who you now recognize before they con you. And this is the important point, and this is part of a conversation I had those guys I was having a jam with last night, Freda, is that once you recognize a con, it doesn't work anymore. Like the Rockefeller Primark, Big Bill Rockefeller, was literally a traveling snake oil salesman. And occasionally, it was actually quite dangerous to be a snake oil salesman in the Old West, because what if somebody from the town had actually gone to another town and told everybody in that town about this guy who conned them all by selling snake oil? You go up and you roll into town, you set up your stage, and you're prepared to lull everybody into your big con, and you wind up having your stage used as a hangman's noose for yourself.
Yeah. Well, you know, Vinny, you've brought up a couple of good points. The whole idea, I mean, it's classic misdirection. It's an elaborate shell game that's going on in our everyday lives. You know, don't pay attention to the guy behind the curtain. I mean, I have this dialogue running with my children. I use the classic fairy tale of the Emperor's New Clothes, the one about the emperor who got scammed by the so-called tailor who he paid to fashion a invisible garment, and the emperor walked up and down Main Street buck naked in front of all the town. And they're all buying into it. Everybody believes it's, oh, what a beautiful garment. What a beautiful garment. And it took a child who said, wait a second. The emperor's naked. What are you guys talking about? And all of a sudden, everybody, you know, the shells fell away from their eyes. The illusion was smashed in that moment, and they all started laughing at him. You know, and the realization was once that curtain and the blinders have been pulled off, you can't help but see it. Now, it's like looking at one of those 3D pictures. When you adjust your eyes just right, the picture jumps out at you, you know?
Yeah.
But for a while, it looked like nothing until you adjusted your eyes.
See, and it's just like as in the emperor wears no clothes. The truth is always dangling and jingling in front of your face.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And, you know, the elaborate shell game of the three card Monty, the snake oil salesman. What a great analogy. You know, the thing about the snake oil salesman and the three card Monty guy is he's always got people in the crowd on his payroll who are playing people that are getting beat in front of the mark, in front of the guy you want to get the money from. So that he'll think, oh, wow, this is easy. I can do it. They've got people in the crowd in your group of people who are involved, who are working for the other side. And that's what we got here in our life around us. We have people who are co-conspirators, people who are indulging in the game as well. And they tell us the myth of the free market society where everybody who has an opportunity to make it one day if they work hard and are honest. That's BS. We all know it's rigged. You can't win. The game is rigged. The only their elite brothers, their friends, their little buddies, their cousins, they're the only ones who are going to get ahead. Everybody else suffers.
Think about this. You know how certain groups of people would have like an inside joke? For example, I could make a joke about, say, 9/11 or something really dark that the ordinary person who doesn't know that 9/11 was an inside job, for example, just wouldn't get, right? So it's like an inside joke. So it's all going on in front of everybody else's face, but we're the ones that get it. It's not entirely dissimilar with how the elite work. You know, for example, when you go to a job interview, what are you wearing? You're wearing a suit. What have you got around your neck? Fredo, what's that around your neck when you're wearing a suit as well?
It looks like a cable toe to me. It looks like a tie that's binding you, that's holding you captive, that's saying you've submitted to the yoke. The yoke of labor.
No. It's actually the collar around your neck.
Ah.
And also, what's around your wrists?
Go ahead.
Your cuffs.
Cuffs, yeah,
that's
sure.
Why you have cuff links.
Okay, I get it. I get where you're going with this.
So you're walking into a job interview with a tie for a leash, a collar around your neck, and cuffs around your wrists. And you think that you're free. And it's freaking hilarious.
There is no bigger farce than that. I must agree. You know, it's true. And that's one of those things that's dangling right in front of our face. That's how they do it. You know, I mean, our entire lives is an elaborate shell game where everything is hidden right in plain sight, right in front of you. And the greatest, I you know, this is the dialogue I have with my children. I try to, you know, explain to them that they want to convince you that of many things. As long as you don't buy into it, that has no power over you. You have to believe it for it to have a power over you. Just like believing the emperor was wearing invisible garments.
I bet you that we should do. We should go into a job interview wearing our emperor suit. And we'll just tell the person that this is the new business suit, man. Can't you see it? It's right here. You know? I mean, the trick to this new look is you place the tie a little lower.
Well, what do you mean?
I don't need to explain what I mean. And I probably shouldn't do so under FCC regulation.
Okay, I get it.
Like a soap opera, it's all implied.
Sure.
I wonder how many people would fall for that. You know, like, for example, if you got Gucci in on the scam, and Gucci was selling a $11,000 Valentino Emperor suit that was invisible.
I think they could get
and weightless.
I think in the current climate of general consciousness out there, I think there is definitely a market for the classic invisible garment.
And get that. And get this. It is so comfortable that it doesn't feel like you're wearing anything at all.
You've already got the promo. You've already got the tag. There it is, man.
Oh, yes. And of course, we should sell these to people in Congress. But of course, talking about FCC regulations, it might violate some of that. But then again, I think that there's far more disgusting things that you see on mainstream universe than any amount of lewd joking around could ever be considered. Don't you think, hey, we're going to go and murder 1 million people and contaminate their land for the rest of time, so that a quarter of the babies that are now born in Iraqi soil are born to form some by depleted uranium. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen. Trying to vote, shall we?
Ladies and gentlemen, do me a favor, smash the television and burn the newspaper. That shit will never tell you that the president's a traitor. Believe what you want, but my evidence is greater. What you know about the Bilderberg and New World Order? What you know about the real fluoride in your water? What you know about the bleed of uranium in the mortar? What you know about APAC controlling the reporter? What's wrong with
Welcome.
The world? People kill people, that other people.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinny Eastwood Show. The lighter side of genocide, because in a world so full of chaos and madness, if you lose your sense of humor, you'll go friggin' nuts. And what also can make you feel much better is being recognized for the work that you do. You know, just some people get really far in this world along particular tracks, and they surprise people with how much they've done, what kind of a great character they are, etc. And Frederick is one of those people, and it's been like one of virtually the best show of my life, mate.
Wow. Well, I'm glad. You are pleased.
I'm also pleased by my performance as well, because I think it's like when I interview somebody who's really good at what they do, they help me to lift my game. You know what I mean?
Oh, I agree. I do. It happens with me. You know, I had a guest on just recently. John Michael Greer came on my show, and he has that same way. He's just very learned. He has a lot to talk about with what he's interested in, and he shared so much. And this weekend I have Dr. Joseph P. Farrell coming on from GizaDeathStar.com. And, I mean, his show with me last year, is still the highest-watched show on my YouTube shows. It was over 6,000 hits at this point. So, I mean, he's the most popular one, and he's coming on this weekend. And it's the same thing with him. The guy's written, like, 25 books. He writes books faster than I can read them. I'll get a book of his to read. He'll write a new book before I finish reading his book. I mean, it's amazing. He's a dynamo. I've never seen anything like it.
I think what's happening here is humanity basically reacts to protect itself, much like immune system reacts to protect the body. And collectivism is the disease, and individualism is the cure. A collectivist thinks, I can take property from you, I can deprive you of life, I can kill you, I can round you up, I can take your guns, I can take everything, okay? As long as I deem it necessary to make it necessary for everybody. You know, it's just basically like no different to Aryanism, you know, like our race is the one that conquered everybody, you know, that kind of Hitlerian nonsense, essentially. It's all just perpetualized in our current society. And that's why I find it great that we have now the technology to broadcast and to make public all of the stuff that they're doing. It's within minutes now, not hours, minutes. a story will come off a mainstream headline, and there will already be some person who, for that particular individual, that particular area is a niche for them. And they will have it done very quickly, much quicker than anybody else could ever organize an organization to create something for, or to do the background research that's necessary to have the best opinion at that particular time. Those who have the research behind them, basically, they can just look at a headline, barely even have to read the article, and they already know what it's going to be talking about, what misconceptions will be implanted, what kind of spin there's likely to be, and simply tell you the truth of the matter. And that's all you need at the end of the day, is a good knowledge of what's already happened, what the game plan normally is.
Oh, I agree. You know, there is a real Wild West feel to this whole telecommunications aspect, a frontiering notion. I mean, we have, you know, like you said, it's an Ayn Randian nightmare scenario of stifling excellence while we reward mundanity and you know, like inanity. And we're rewarding this over and over again. And, you know, the internet and the technology that's at our fingertips provides a means for us to excel. For those who have the spirit, the frontiering and innovative spirit to excel, to gather their own research and present the material they gather and have people out there who have access and who can take it and run with it. And then, you know, there's a whole other dimension to this, too, that we haven't really got into much, you know, tonight, but that there's a creative side to all this. I honestly believe in the principles and philosophies that are laid down in the book called The Sync Book, S-Y-N-C, The Sync Book. Anybody out there who wants to check out this book, written by 26 different bloggers and authors and artists, and it was edited by Alan Green, who will be on my show next month, as a matter of fact. And he's already been on my show once, and we've had another contributor from the book too. But what they lay down is a philosophy based on synchronicity and synchromysticism, and the idea that there are patterns that are being communicated to our consciousness from the universe through pop culture media and telecommunication transmissions, you know, in an oracle-like fashion, that we can divine deeper meanings and understandings and patterns from all this.
Yeah, and it's broadcasting at every room in the house, whether it's your bedroom sink or even the kitchen sink.
And so, you know, one of the things that I want to do is I want to, you know, explore this theme. And I've created a blog, Vinny, called synchrofiction.blogspot.com. It is a literary blog. I am literally launching right here and now on your show, on the Vinny Eastwood show.
You need to really confirm this for me. Is it literally literary?
It is literally literary. And I am hereby announcing to everyone listening and anyone who listens in the future archives of this edition of the Vinny Eastwood show that I am officially launching an actual subgenre. You've heard of steampunk, Victorian futurism, sort of a spinoff from science fiction.
There is no way that I have heard of steampunk.
Well, it's out there, my friend. And now I am creating streampunk, what I would call synchrofiction, fiction based on synchronicity and synchromysticism, dealing with cyber tales and ideas that surround this theme of the universe communicating to us through electronic telecommunication. And I've created, if anybody wants to go check out the blog, we're doing like an ongoing theme where people are contributing chapters. So we're all engaging in this mosaic tapestry of a story, a tale that is synchrofiction, cyber tales. And we're calling
That'd be cool. I could like invent a new government department that emerges in the future, like the Department of Scumbaggery.
There it is, man. I can see it now. Absolutely. How about the Bureau of Scumbaggery, though? You know, so we can have scumbaggery bureaucrats. I mean, it's perfect, right?
Oh, what? The Bureau of Scumbaggery, BOS, otherwise known as the BOSS.
There we go. See? And, you know, I was thinking about a future society where, you know, it's so run by insurance companies that you can't even go outside without having an underwriter policy at your front door. They have to check all the security signs and make sure, you know, calculate the barometric pressure, whether it's really worth it to let you go outside and take a chance of some mishap occurring, you know, underwriting you. And therefore, those who are more exciting and adventurous could be sponsored by user groups that would observe their antics out in the world of dangerous insecurities of the future, you know? I mean, just a postmodern dystopia, classic sense.
Yeah, exactly. And apparently it also makes a nice cocktail drink if you ask for a postmodern dystopia at a bar.
Right. All right. Well, I think we have thoroughly digressed.
Look, I think that conspiracy, whenever you talk about it, because it's so interwoven into our society, you cannot expect people to stay on topic. And I think people should stop trying. You know, we live in a tangentiary world. Whether something happened today or 100 years ago, the information is still relevant. And if you talk about things that you have happened, it gives you a well much better understanding of what is happening now, I believe. And so tangents should not be discouraged. If anything, they should be encouraged and even exploited.
I couldn't agree more. Vinny, I want to thank you so much for letting me come on your show tonight. And anybody who wants to check out my show on Saturday nights at 10 p.m. Central Standard Time on AmericanFreedomRadio.com, it's currently called Radio Free Humanity. It will be after March 24th called The Middle Chamber with Freighter X. You can go to my website at MiddleChamberFX.com. You can follow along in my chat room there. Also, my blogspot, freighterx.blogspot.com, and the new blog, synchrofiction.blogspot.com. Thank you. This week, we're going to have Dr. Joseph P. Farrell from GizaDeathStar.com. Don't miss it. It's going to be an awesome show.
Now, see, and not to be confused with the English brand of Giza.
I don't even know what you're talking about.
Have you ever heard English slang?
You had to stump me, didn't you, on live radio before the end of your show. You always have to stump me, Vinny. I see how you are, man.
Sorry. In the UK, it's a slang term, you know, kind of like I would use bro, dude, or cuz, man. That kind of thing. It's a personal pronoun. You just call him a geezer.
Oh, geezer, right. I know that. Yeah, you got me with the accent there, you know.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I think that the accent's very sexy to some people.
Okay.
Well, so I've been told. And I think that's the thing. People who speak in a different accent, and it doesn't matter. Like, if anybody's got a different accent, even to me, it's actually much more interesting to listen to.
I agree, man. I agree. I think that it's, you know, it takes all kinds to make the world go round, my friend. And it's been an awesome, awesome show with you. I look forward to your appearance. Cinco de Mayo, Vinny Eastwood, the 5th of May on The Middle Chamber with Freighter X. Stay tuned.
That's right. We will be sacrificing chickens and various, and various other
quantities of rum while we do it.
Yes. And various other forms of livestock will be involved, but not in a sexual way. We'll have Vinny Eastwood and Freighter X coming up on Cinco de Mayo. And thank you very much for joining in today, ladies and gentlemen. We'll see you again sometime.
Goodbye, everybody.